This is an AMI podcast.
Margaret Weldon at her home studio in Toronto. Kelly McDonald at the home studio in London, Ontario. When you barbecue, I mean, I used to do a lot of this puttering around. I had an electric one at one point, and it wasn't too bad. I've had, you know, gas ones as well and really enjoy that. But I'm going to tell you, Megs, learned a lot of little things from that that, you know, it's not saying I was terrible when I barbecue, but you sit back and say, oh, yeah, especially the direct and indirect heat thing was really a nice thing. A lot of the things that, hey, I'm doing that okay, I'm doing that right, because I would ask. But there are certain little tips that Jeff's item there during lifestyle really helped out with.
I must admit, I'm not a big barbecuer. I mean, I like to eat barbecued food, don't get me wrong. But I learned something today about direct and indirect heat. It's something I never would have thought about. I just would have thought about putting something right on the barbecue and maybe letting it cook a little longer because it wasn't on a gas stove or whatever.
Yeah. I think for a lot of people, the cleaning thing is great. And like Jeff suggested there, and the item said, cook to temperature, not to time. Really, really important. And being able, and with accessibility now, there's so many neat things that we're able to do as people with vision deficits to be able to feel just as much like that chef, doing things carefully and easily and accessible for us. So really, really like that. Folks, on Fridays, we get a chance to visit with John Beeler from the App Show, and we have our app update.
This is the App Show, unlocking software secrets for smartphones, tablets, TVs, and more.
John, welcome back to the show. How are you, sir?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Feeling awesome. It's a good show. We always have fun on Fridays. How's weather out there?
It's beautiful. We're heading into a mini heat wave.
That's what I hear. Yeah. And of course, the concerns with the fires and that, and how are things on that front out there?
Not good. It's very dry, and it's going to be interesting. I'm going on a little road trip tomorrow, and I'm going into sort of the thick of it, and we're not sure if the trip's going to happen, because if there's a fire in the way, then we get redirected.
And they get directed, those fires, they redirect themselves very, very quickly, very easily. So, be safe and be careful if you guys make it out on the road.
Yeah.
Sir, let's start with, Apple will use selfie security for verification for government-issued identification. So let's talk a little bit. This is from, you know, the wallet app. Can you give us the details?
Yeah, this is something that was sort of announced at the developers conference in June. And people have been poking around into the iOS 15 beta, and they found all the details about this and how it's going to work. And it's kind of cool, actually. So one of the things that Apple's touting is that you could, you know, if your jurisdiction supports it, and right now it looks like, at least out of the gate, it'll be a couple of states in the U.S., but you'd be able to put your driver's license, for example, or your services card. We have a BC services card. I'm not sure what you guys have in Ontario, but, you know, these types of documents, you could actually basically scan them and verify who you are, and then they'll be in your Apple Wallet. So you can literally just, you know, do the double click on your watch or your phone, and it'll just pop up and you can show it, and it's a verified, authentic digital ID. So
I think we've got, because so many people worried, and there were, you know, you'd leave your stuff in a vehicle and they were telling people, hey, be careful because people break in, you lose your stuff. So they'd say, used to say, make a photocopy of it. And people say, well, is that legal? Is that a document? But we've had to get to that point with so much of our ID these days, whether it be a driver's license or anything, because of the problem like that. And at least if you're losing your phone, you're not losing the genuine article.
That's right. Yeah. So what Apple's doing to help verify you that you're actually, I mean, this is above and beyond what would have to happen by your, you know, the agency that would be issuing that document, right? Like, you still need to, you know, they'll need to phone home and do all that kind of stuff, but they're using something called selfie-based verification, which is a little different than Face ID. Mm. And the way it works is it uses a selfie camera, but you basically take a photo of yourself, then you close your eyes, open your mouth, and raise your eyebrows until the device vibrates. So basically it gets, I think it's probably taking like a little video of all the facial movements, and then it can extrapolate from that all the different contortions your face might make depending on when you're trying to unlock that particular document. So it's an interesting little approach that's a little different than Face ID, which normally you would have to sort of like look at the phone and sort of tilt your head in different directions around the clock, basically, to so you can see what your face looks like from a number of different angles. So this really seems cool. to be the way that they're going to do it, which is really neat.
Yeah, and I think, you know, I mean, sort of like when you put your thumb on the phone and you're to change it, put it, grab it again, grab another grip, and just like you said about the head tilting, but this really does cover off what kinds of looks a face can have, just like we've had to have the concerns about masks and your phone being able to identify. But with this being able to be that intuitive, that's really tremendous.
It's also going to prevent, there was a lot of people that were trying to outfake Face ID. So they would, went as far as like 3D printing someone's face to see if they could use the 3D printed version, right? Which again would be static. So this little test would force, you know, them to put motors in there so that their eyebrows would move and all that kind of, like, it would be ridiculous. Like no one would ever go to that length. Although I'm sure some YouTuber will, but, but this, I think, is actually a higher security thing. The other cool thing about this is that all the analysis of this gets done on your device. So nothing actually phones home. It just verifies on your device locally.
Wow. Wow. And that makes it harder, even with hacking and stuff. For that going on, you're in control of it a little more.
That's right.
John, Amazon's older Kindles will be losing their internet access as of this December. Is there anything we should be keeping in mind?
Yeah, if you have one of the original Kindles, or even some of the newer ones, actually, I was kind of surprised at this list of what ones are sort of captured by it. Pretty much anyone that uses 3G connectivity. And one of the neat things about the original Kindles and even the recent ones is that even if you don't have Wi-Fi, you could still use and download books from the Kindle store onto your Kindle just by using the built-in wireless technology that essentially what it was is a very small amount of like data service that your Kindle would be allowed to use. And the really neat thing was is that they actually made it work in like over 100 countries around the world. So no matter where you are, where say you're traveling, you're at the beach in France and you want to download a new book to read on, you know, on your cabana there, you could do that and it wouldn't cost you anything. And you even had some limited browsing ability as well. The newer ones all have Wi-Fi as well. And I think the last one I bought, I just bought the Wi-Fi only one. But the older ones, they're turning off this I think it was called WhisperNet for their connectivity. And you're not going to be able to download anything new if that's the only way your Kindle worked. So typically the newer ones with 4G support, those will still work, but the 3G ones will definitely not work unless you have Wi-Fi. And if you don't have Wi-Fi on that particular device, you're probably not going to be able to download anything new at all onto that device. The Wow. old books will still work, but, you know, and there's other workarounds you can do as well. Like one of the things that that I do is with my Kindle, I actually don't use the Kindle store because I find there's other places that sell books that I like better. And I also put a lot of my own like PDFs and stuff on my Kindle. So I actually use an app called Calibre, which is a free app for all platforms. And you basically plug your Kindle in via USB to your computer, and then it will give you this sort of little interface that allows you to add, like literally drag and drop books onto your Kindle, which is really cool. So that'll work with any model.
Yeah. Wow. Wow. And is it just that that's just the way it's moving to? Because we're talking a device that's been the way it's been for a long time.
Yeah, well, some of these networks, like nobody supports them anymore. They're Mm-mm. like 2G networks, right? So they're like worse than dial-up speeds, right?
Yeah.
And if the network isn't there, then Amazon can't offer that service. So basically, they're just telling people in advance of these networks shutting down, you need to either look at other options, upgrade your device, or you know, be happy with the books you have now.
Okay. Would Amazon cover a discount or something, John, if somebody wanted to upgrade their Kindle device, or is that basically your problem?
No, actually, they are giving discounts, I think, until August 15th. And if you have one of these devices, chances are Amazon would have emailed you a coupon. You can get $50 off a Paperwhite or $15 in ebook credits as well. So that seems pretty reasonable for some of these devices, which are probably 10 years old.
Yeah. Yeah. Sure. What a great way though, to move things and say, look, it, you know, it's time to upgrade, to do something about this. Here's what you do if you bring it in, or just, guys, you got to know that it does nothing but create good business. Let's talk about Google. Google has developed an Android app for, Google has developed a switch to Android app for iOS. How clever is this?
Yeah, well, this is something that Apple did a little while ago. They had a move to iPhone or iOS app on the Google Play Store. So if you were an Android user and you wanted to go, what it would do is it would gather up all of your stuff and you basically run the app on both devices and they talk to each other and they're like, hey, we're going to like migrate all of your stuff, as many settings and photos and videos, like all that stuff that it can, all in one neat little like tap to do it. And we actually did this on our TV show, and it actually works as advertised. It's really slick. The problem is if you want to go from iOS to Android, there's really no easy way of doing that. You can back up all your stuff to Google Drive, that kind of stuff, but you're still doing it manually. And in both cases, it won't back up and bring forward any apps because there's a whole bunch of differences between the two stores and that kind of thing. So, and essentially, this is basically an update to Android's data restore tool. And this basically just allows you to create a full backup, and then you can basically install this app on iOS and then basically transfer all your stuff to your new Android device.
Wow. So a little manual access to do it, but at least you bring your stuff over.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, I think so.
Google Maps has the new features that help users navigate the world post-lockdown. John, how are they doing this?
Yeah, this is kind of interesting. If you've ever used Google Maps and you're driving, one of the things that it does is it sort of looks at everybody else that's using Google Maps and shows sort of aggregated traffic data. So what they're doing, though, with this, as people come back to, you know, their commutes on transit systems, buses, trains, that kind of thing, they're actually using that kind of data to say, hey, you know what, maybe you don't want to take that train right now because it's really busy. And if you're still a little anxious about coming back into a crowded space with people that you don't know, maybe you should take an alternate form of transportation. So they're calling it transit crowdedness predictions. And this is part of Google Maps for over 10,000 cities in 100 different countries. In places like New York and Sydney, they actually have, to the level they can tell you, transit car level detail. So on the train, on the subway in New York, for example, it'll tell you how packed that train is in real time.
That is nice. I mean, you look at it for so many other purposes and reasons. I know, and again, a lot of people are having these concerns, but you can see this evolving into somewhat of a human traffic, I don't want to say control, but predictor.
Exactly. Yeah. And so, but it also, I mean, I think their intent is to reduce the anxiety of going back to work, going back to the commute, that type of thing. And definitely, you know, we're seeing like in BC where, you know, we're pretty close to almost back to normal levels. And, you know, if you've been living in your house for a year, that's a big step to go outside again. And you know, you're not used to being around so many people, especially in crowded places, lineups. There's a big night market out in Vancouver here that the first weekend that they opened after the, you know, the lockdowns were sort of removed, everyone was complaining how busy it was and there was just no social distancing. So this would help you sort of figure out your plan of attack for going back to the office and knowing that maybe you don't want to take that bus, maybe you want to take a different route, just that's not as busy and you're not going to be squished up against people if you're not ready for that yet.
Yeah, and it can go to so many other areas of life, especially now as things are, or depending what the new world is going to look like. John, fantastic stuff. Enjoy the weekend. Thank you and be safe.
You too. Take care.
Check out the App Show Saturdays at 4 p.m. Eastern on AMI Audio. John Beeler will be back with us on the program next Friday for his weekly app update. Coming up in a couple of moments when Margaret Weldon and I return, a group called Nature for All is working on making a conservation area in the Ottawa area more accessible and inclusive. Karen McGee, she's going to arrive and she's going to tell us a little bit more about the details on this. So stay tuned.